Drawing room over here.
You made it. Oh, come on through. Do you fancy drink? What's your tipple? Welcome to The Drawing Room, a space for intimate and surprising conversations. I'm Andy Park. During the 20th century, hundreds of thousands of children, some Australian-born, some migrants, were placed in institutions or out-of-home care here in Australia. In 2009, the then Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, made a formal apology to these forgotten Australians and pledged to stop it from ever happening again. But what does it mean to be part of those families, to have your history and connection vanish by circumstances beyond your control? In Sleeplessness, Kaz Therese tells the story of family through fragments of life, out of order, but adding up to something. Kaz, welcome to you. Come on in. Take a seat.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You say that there was a sense of darkness hovering over your family when you were growing up. What do you mean by that?
Well, there was a sense of, like, general not knowing. And, you know, I grew up with my mother, who was a single mother, my sister, my brother. But we didn't know any extended family, or just didn't have any stories about family or old photos about family. And my mum never told any stories about her childhood or growing up, and she kept saying that she didn't remember. So this kind of huge blackness, this darkness of just not knowing. Yeah, and that was kind of a forebodingness that kind of exploded one day. And through my art and through some discovery of some documents, you know, in 1999 when we were in our 20s, kind of opened up this huge, you know, narrative about what really happened to my mother's mother and, you know, these extended families. And it went all the way back to Budapest. And I went on this kind of 20-year investigative forensic journey to try and map out a family history.
So up until the 90s, what did you know? What were you told? I mean, was it just the absence of a truth or absence of a story or something else?
It's more of like my mum having grown up, spending her childhood in an institution, St. Joseph's Girls Home, Lane Cove, like a Catholic orphanage. She literally had her memory erased. So it's more of an erasure of memory. So when you asked her anything, she would literally say, "I don't remember." So it wasn't any kind of manipulation or sidestepping. It was just a blank, you know, a void. And, you know, part of this kind of creative journey was trying to unlock mum's memory, you know, trying to find ways to unlock that memory. And that memory, of course, was because of the trauma she experienced through, you know, being in an orphanage in the care of the Catholic Church, which is, you know, what the government apologised during the Forgotten Australians and was very much outlined in the recent Royal Commission.
And up until your 20s, and we'll get to that moment in your early 20s in a moment, you lived in Bidwell, which had a terrible reputation in those years. What was the reality for you living in Bidwell?
Well, again, it kind of added to that kind of void where, you know, no one really wanted to know about Bidwell, and, you know, we had access to very little in relationship to being a part of any community or any kind of culture, you know. And in the show I talk about the Bidwell riots that happened in 1981, which were, you know, comically about a young 13-year-old girl meeting another 13-year-old girl and challenging her to a fight on an oval after school, to fight over a boy they both liked. And after school, over 1,000 kids turned up to watch the fight. And somehow a news helicopter, Channel 9 news helicopter, was flying over at the same time and landed the helicopter on the oval and then took all these photos of these kids fighting. And the next day, those photos were posted on all national newspapers with fabricated kind of headlines like, you know, talking about, you know, riots in Bidwell and Bidwell kids on the rampage. And it started this kind of brutal media narrative around this area and these children being particularly, you know, rough and particularly bad kids. And that was kind of where it started. I mean, there's been a lot of other kind of media beat-ups of that area over the generations. But, you know, growing up there, kind of having that media scandal happen and having that kind of this viral national kind of campaign where people were saying that you were, even though you were only 10 years old, you know, bad essentially, then that means that you disconnect straight away from community. I grew up kind of lying about where I was from so I wouldn't be ridiculed, publicly ridiculed. And I think a lot of people from Mount Druitt feel that, you know, and it's I've spent a lot of time in my career creating, you know, positive cultural events in that region to counteract that.
When you were 14, your sister was kicked out of the house and you were left at home alone. That's a very difficult age to be left without support from someone as important as a sibling and a sister.
Yeah, absolutely. And my brother and, you know, and parents. It was a really traumatic time. And I think, you know, recently my brother came over from Europe to hang out, and we kind of immediately go back to that night and to that event in our lives, even though, you know, we're all in our late 40s now, because it's just a very hard thing to reconcile. And as I was kind of school captain, I was just elected school captain, but by the end of the year, you know, I barely was going to school, let alone kind of passing tests at a really high rate. And, you know, I just kind of became a statistic, I suppose, of the area, even though before that that trauma happened, you know, I was doing very well academically and, you know, was a very responsible person. But by the end, I kind of became a teenage statistic of that region, you know, kind of smashing windows at night and wandering around without any parenting. And I used to travel to the city and go to bars and lie about my age. And I just spent a lot of time in cool jazz bars with people who were much older than me, and being in very precarious situations and kind of coming in a way, yeah, meeting lots of queer women, gay women, and which was interesting to me, but I certainly was a little bit too young to kind of be out on my own in that kind of environment for sure.
On ABCRN, I'm Andy Park. We're talking about the new show Sleeplessness. Kaz Therese is my guest here in the drawing room. So tell me about travelling to Budapest in search of your grandmother's story. What were you looking for, and did you know the moment when you found it?
It was really amazing because, like, I'd never been overseas, you know, coming from an underclass, none of my family had been overseas. So, you know, the fact that it took me there and somehow I made my way there, and it was extraordinary. I tried to find some family history. You know, I had friends come over and help me search. I got a kind of two Hungarian translators, and I had a filmmaker come over, and I made some film images of me in the guise of my grandmother. And I wondered if I became my grandmother in film, that I might find her in real life. And that's kind of like this, so it kind of was creating this family archive, kind of calling to her. But unfortunately, what I did learn is during that time, you know, after World War II, the whole of Hungary was just in such trauma from the Nazi invasion during World War II and then straight after the Red Army. And there's actually a museum in Hungary called the Museum of Terror, which outlines that very kind of, you know, time throughout World War II, you know, 1945 to 56, when the Nazis and the Red Army really had, were, you know, devastating the lives and the place of Budapest. And so that was gave me a sense of why the story is so fragmented, because I think a lot of people who were born in Budapest around the war, you know, there's a lot of fragmented families and a lot of people still looking for each other today.
And in fact, in this work, you say that trauma fragments the memory. What does that mean for you in your life?
Well, it means that, you know, it's that kind of idea of being able to remember things. And even though, you know, I'm very well educated now, but there's still this sense of not being able to remember my own history. You know, I had a friend not so long ago who told me, who said to me, remember we went to the Alanis Morissette concert, you know, at the Enmore Theatre before she was really famous, and I had absolutely no memory of that. And even though I'm very, that would be a really exciting thing for me to remember. So there's lots of things that I have to try and ask my friends to tell me about my story, even though because they lived it with me, to retain my own narrative, because trauma kind of absorbs and scatters things into a thousand fragments. And because you're in survival mode so often, that can really impact, you know, the way you experience things and how your memory is absorbed, because you're so kind of hyper-focused on the now and into the future in that kind of survival mode. And when you don't have, and you haven't grown up with a sense of storytelling, you know, it's a kind of a line I use in the show, is that I couldn't, up until the age of 30, I couldn't tell any stories about myself. And that kind of idea of storytelling and remembering stories is a really important part of what I'm trying to say in the show. And I mean, particularly as an Australian, when, you know, you talk about the haunting and about the, you know, all this kind of haunting is very familiar in the Australian narrative about, you know, particularly with First Nations and Forgotten Australians, where, you know, the Australia not telling the truth about our history is a haunting to all of us. And it really kind of fragments the memory of Australia and what Australia truly is, you know, that those truth tellings about true Australian histories. And that comes nationally, politically, socially, and comes down to the individual and the families. And so that's kind of the bigger narrative of the work. And I've been working a lot with Indigenous elder Aunty Rhonda Dixon Grosvenor, Gadigal Bidjigal elder, looking at the experiences of the Stolen Generation. And I've been meeting with members of the Stolen Generation and talking to them about us, the Forgotten Australians. And a lot of members of the Aboriginal community don't know that the Forgotten Australians exist. And so bringing these two communities together for healing, and so there can be more empowerment in these stories, and in this sharing of kind of having experiences of being institutionalized as children. I'm also inviting members of the asylum seeker community and the refugee advocacy community in. So it's all about these people who are profoundly impacted by the government's practice of institutionalizing, you know, children, institutionalizing migrants, and First Peoples. It's kind of a practice that Australia continues to do today with Nauru, Manus Island, Don Dale, and the show is very much about that practice needing to stop, because it's a rupture and there's no excuse for it, and it's actually kind of destroying Australia's ability to come together as a nation, like truly come together as a multicultural, as a diverse nation. So I'm really much, very much using my narrative to try and find ways to bring all these communities together, you know, for a healing and a conversation.
We hear a lot about cycles of violence or cycles of trauma. How hard is it to recognise that cycle and break it, or is that an ongoing process?
It's extremely hard, and it kind of also talks of a big, you know, big conversation in my life and about the show is about class and coming from an underclass or working class, but underclass or poverty class, and trying to move into a kind of middle class environment, which is the arts and culture, is extremely difficult, and maintaining, you know, producing outcomes that are of quality and, you know, maintaining a particular way of working and a way of being able to study, all these kinds of things have been extremely difficult to me. And I've kind of also, you know, based my practice in Western Sydney to because I believe there should be more, you know, working class narratives and underclass narratives in our culture, in our Australian culture. But at the same time, I have to move back and forth, almost recoding and decoding myself to speak to different class structures, you know, to be able to go through institutions like the Opera House or even Carriage Works and then to kind of filter it. So it kind of, I can filter it through my knowledge and what I do best as a kind of someone from where I'm from. And so I make sure that I'm not, when I'm invited into these spaces, I'm not set up to fail, because a lot of institutions, whether they're arts institutions or government institutions, set people up from people who are not middle class to fail, and they can't survive in those spaces. So a big part of my work as an artist is to promote lots of diverse stories, put a lot of artists who are from Western Sydney or from different classes onto the main stages, and to navigate that space from a class perspective, from a cultural perspective, and to still create these really meaningful and valuable and incredible artworks. And it's exhausting, to be honest. And I just hope that through my work, Sleeplessness, you know, that people can see that, you know, it's been 20 years of research and work. And I think people see all these kind of processes and thinking in the work, even though I don't speak to it. The work's very visual. And I hope, and I think it does open a new conversation, you know, a number of conversations.
You say that up to the age of 30, you couldn't tell any stories about yourself. What is it like to tell those stories now?
Yeah, it's pretty profound, I've got to say, you know, and it is huge. I mean, being from Mount Jewett, you quickly learn that you're not allowed to tell your story. You will be shamed for it. Also, I'm a queer person, a non-binary person. So coming up in the 90s with that also, you know, was very difficult with the profound amount of homophobia that was in the air, that was around socially. And, you know, there's just a profound amount of intersectionality in my life. So to put it all on stage and to talk from a place of knowing is really profound. And on opening night, you know, I was experiencing, I would say, white terror. I was so terrified and exhausted in ways that I can't describe. But I did it, and I'm doing it, and it's incredible. It's maybe something I won't be able to speak to until, you know, after it, but it is profound for me. And I think the vulnerability and integrity that takes is what the audience are experiencing the most, you know.
Kaz Therese has been my guest in The Drawing Room, and Sleeplessness is on this week at Carriage Works and on the 19th and 20th of August at the Riverside Theatre in Parramatta.